Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, November 15th, 2024. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with entertainment. SpongeBob's Time. Decatur Underground Theater brings cartoon character to stage. If nautical nonsense be something you wish, the cast of the Decatur Underground Theater is ready to drop on the deck and flop like a fish. DUT actors will be on stage for their performance of SpongeBob, the musical, for the next 2 weekends at the Decatur Civic Center. Tickets are available online or by calling the venue. DUT performs 2 shows a year. SpongeBob will be its fall show. In the past, the local theater company has performed holiday musicals, according to director Sandy Rivas. The cast was instead ready to celebrate the iconic animated character's 25th anniversary. This was SpongeBob's time, she said. With a larger cast and tropical theme, DUT is performing a different type of show than what their audiences are used to during this time of year. Our shows are the classics, Rivas said, but what we really wanted to do was to have a show that was positive, that was fun. SpongeBob met the criteria for the theater company's fall musical. That's our goal, to put on shows that lift people's spirits, Rivas said. The original music for the show was written by several popular artists, including Sarah Bareilles, Jon Bon Jovi, Cyndi Lauper, and They Might Be Giants. The musical is made up of 35 cast members representing characters from the popular cartoon show who live in Bikini Bottom. It's a family-type setting, Rivas said, about the show as well as the cast. People bond really strong in these shows, he said. SpongeBob is the second DUT show for 17-year-old Ethan Edwards, who will be on stage as the main character. It's weird to see how, from the cartoon, it can be transformed into an actual production, he said. The way this show incorporates many different characters and different plot lines, it really enhances all of SpongeBob. According to the director, Edwards has many of the same characteristics as the cartoon character. He just sounds like SpongeBob, Rivas said. Laughing was an important part of the audition because you've got to pull off the SpongeBob laugh, Rivas said. According to the cast, SpongeBob is a happy sponge that tries to pull people together. Set in the bottom of the ocean, Bikini Bottom is also colorful with a tropical atmosphere which reaches out into the audience. They should feel it too, Rivas said. If you go, it's the SpongeBob Musical by the Decatur Underground Theater. It's at 7 p.m. today, Friday, and Saturday, November 15th and 16th, and 22nd and 23rd at 2 p.m. Oh, sorry, 7:30 to Friday, Saturday, next Friday and Saturday, and 2 p.m. Sunday, November 17th and November 24th, 2 p.m. Where is the Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza? Tickets are $19 to $24, available online, or call 217-422-7300. Again, that's 217-422-7300. On the web, it's www.decaturunderground.com. Again, decaturunderground.com. And there are several photos here. This is on page 2. And one of them shows Jamie Dunwell Freeman as Squidward Tentacles and Ethan Edwards as SpongeBob SquarePants performing during the musical on Tuesday for the Decatur Underground Theater production of SpongeBob the Musical at the Decatur Civic Center. Showtimes will be November 15th through the 17th and 22nd through the 24th. And Squidward has long braids, probably for tentacles, and SpongeBob has yellow makeup on his face, a yellow shirt, red tie, and red suspenders. And then there's another picture of vocal director Cindy Johnson making improvements to a song on Tuesday during the rehearsal for the Decatur Underground Theater's production of SpongeBob the Musical at the Decatur Civic Center. Showtimes will be November 15th through the 17th and 22nd through the 24th. And then another smaller photo shows Ethan Edwards as SpongeBob SquarePants going over notes with Foley artist Robinson Rincuzio on Tuesday during rehearsal at the Decatur Underground Theater production of SpongeBob the Musical at the Decatur Civic Center. And it repeats the show times, November 15th through the 17th and 22nd through the 24th. And they're looking at notes on a laptop computer. Robin Rincuzio is showing Ethan Edwards the particular note. And on the front page, there's a large photo of Ethan Edwards leads as SpongeBob SquarePants on Tuesday during rehearsal for the Decatur Underground Theater production of SpongeBob the Musical at the Decatur Civic Center. And there's many of these characters from SpongeBob the SquarePants on stage. And in this particular picture, Ethan Edwards as SpongeBob is just jumped into the air with his hands out and his legs out and his mouth open. And there's a person in the foreground. I'm not sure who that person represents, but looks like he's singing too. And there are people in the background, characters all in the background, maybe singing and or dancing. And then another picture on the front page shows Lily Rincuzio performing as Sandy Cheeks on Tuesday during the rehearsal of SpongeBob SquarePants, the musical, at the Decatur Civic Center. And she's being held up in the air. Her arms are up, raised high, and she looks like she's singing. And there's two other characters, one with a pirate patch on her head, and they're raising her up in the air, and other people have their arms out toward her, probably during a song. Also on the front page is Illinois government, Mahomet Aquifer concerns heard, more input sought on bill to ban carbon storage under aquifer footprint. This is from Springfield. A bill that would ban carbon sequestration activity within the footprint of the Mahomet Aquifer received its first legislative hearing on Wednesday, but failed to advance as state lawmakers seek more input on an issue some view as existential. I think it's most important that we get this right, said Senate President Don Harmon, Democrat of Oak Park, adding that he viewed the hour-long Senate Executive Committee hearing as the beginning of a very critical conversation. The legislation, filed earlier this fall by Senator Paul Faraci, Democrat of Champaign, comes as lawmakers grapple with how to ensure the aquifer, the sole water source, for more than 800,000 people across 15 central Illinois counties, is protected, while a nascent carbon capture and sequestration industry eyeing Illinois due to favorable geology gets off the ground. Lawmakers passed and Governor J.B. Pritzker signed legislation earlier this year that built upon and filled gaps in existing federal regulations to carbon capture and sequestration. This included key protections such as a 2-year moratorium on pipeline construction, extra permitting requirements, and safety provisions. But left unaddressed was whether protections would be enacted to prevent carbon injections thousands of feet underneath sole source aquifers. The designation is significant as it indicates an aquifer that supplies at least 50% of the drinking water for the region and that there is no reasonable alternative source should it become contaminated. the Mahomet Aquifer is the only EPA-designated sole source aquifer in Illinois. The push for carbon capture and storage is an essential part of our broader strategy to combat climate change and move forward a sustainable future, Faraci said. However, we must balance innovation and progress with vigilant protection of our natural resources. Concerns grew a few months ago when Archer Daniels Midland Company was cited by the U.S. EPA in August for injection activity not allowed under its federal carbon sequestration permit and for violating the Safe Drinking Water Act. The agribusiness giant, which has been injecting carbon underneath its Decatur facility for more than a decade, discovered in March that injected carbon seeped from a corroded monitoring well pipe into the ground about 5,000 feet below the surface. Though thousands of feet below any drinking water sources, it was 500 feet above where ADM is permitted to inject carbon. ADM later paused carbon injections at its Decatur site after tests revealed a seepage of fluids from a second monitoring well. That pause is still in effect. The company holds the only permit to inject carbon in the entire state, and it is not within the footprint of the Mahomet Aquifer. However, there are applications for 22 carbon injection well applications in Illinois that are in the pipeline, according to the U.S. EPA, and some of those are within the aquifer's footprint and could be approved as early as 2025. Experts on carbon capture and sequestration who testified on Wednesday said that the risk of a carbon well leak impacting water wells, which are hundreds of feet deep compared to the thousands of feet for carbon storage sites, is very, very low. To date, PRI has found no evidence of negative impact of carbon storage to the groundwater supply, said Mark Miller, deputy director of the Prairie Research Institute and the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. This, however, did not cut with lawmakers representing areas within the aquifer, nor with environmental advocates and many residents within the footprint, who say that that a very low risk is too much risk. The point here is we shouldn't have any risk, said State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet. There's like no acceptable risk because this is the sole source. Faraci said that the status of the aquifer as it relates to carbon sequestration is probably the number one issue he hears about from his constituents. The bill is supported by environmental groups. Excuse me, the computer is not, I'm not behaving here. The Environmental Council and Sierra Club, the town of Normal in McLean County, through their contract lobbyists, also slipped in support. The Illinois Farm Bureau is neutral. It is opposed by business groups such as the Illinois Manufacturers Association and the Illinois Chamber of Commerce, as well as the Illinois Soybean Growers Association and the powerful Local 150 Operating Engineers Union. Donovan Griffith, the IMA's Vice President of Governmental Affairs, encouraged lawmakers to slow things down, noting that the carbon capture legislation that was approved earlier this year was the product of years of conversations and months of painstaking negotiations between a wide range of interest groups. There's no need to pass this today, Griffith said. As has been described, there's no carbon sequestration happening under the Mahomet Aquifer. None is going to be happening tomorrow. I think we have some time to, again, do that due diligence, have those conversations. Faraci said he plans to start those conversations this week. This is not an overnight kind of fix, and there are a lot of parties that are concerned and interested in getting this done right, Faraci said. And the photo here on page A2 shows Governor J.B. Pritzker surrounded by local and state politicians signing legislation governing carbon capture and storage at the Richland Community College National Sequestration Education Center in Decatur on Thursday. Pritzker is sitting at a table with several pens, several pages of papers, which he's signing, and several people standing behind him, smiling. There's no photo on page one. Another front page story, Macon County Courts. Defense claims crime lab won't look at new DNA in Slover case. The defense team claims their efforts to overturn the convictions in one of Central Illinois' most notorious murder cases is being frustrated by the state police crime lab. A new court filing by the Illinois Innocence Project accuses the laboratory of refusing to analyze new DNA evidence in its combined DNA index system, CODIS, in the 1996 murder of Decatur woman Karen Hearn Slover. The accusation is made in the latest supplemental legal motion presented Thursday at a Macon County Circuit Court hearing. Attorneys for the Springfield-based Innocence Project claim Michael Slover Jr., 53, and his 76-year-old mother, Jeanette Slover, and her late 75-year-old husband, Michael Slover Sr., should never have been convicted in the killing of Karen Slover, Michael Slover Jr.'s 23-year-old ex-wife. The victim had been shot repeatedly in the head, and her dismembered body was found dumped in trash bags in Lake Shelbyville. The Innocence Project says the new DNA evidence they've obtained points to other suspects and exonerates the defendants. The DNA evidence in this case is now comprehensive, conclusive, and overwhelmingly supports what the Slovers have steadfastly maintained for the past 28 years, that they're innocent and had absolutely nothing to do with the disappearance and murder of Karen Slover, the motion says. Not only are the Slovers excluded from this DNA evidence, but there are also unknown profiles that belong to the actual perpetrators, or at the very least would provide an investigative lead into the actual perpetrators. The Illinois State Police refused to pursue these leads. This DNA evidence totally vindicates the Slovers. Justice demands their convictions be overturned. Every day in which their convictions are upheld is another miscarriage of justice. Former Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott has come out of retirement to defend the convictions and has yet to present his counter-argument in court. But filings already made outline the nature of the prosecution response, which says that the fresh DNA evidence gleaned from sources such as traces left behind on the garbage bags holding the victim's body parts are just not good enough to meet evidentiary standards. A paper filing made in the court docket by Scott quotes an expert analysis from the State Police Crime Lab describing DNA profile samples submitted on behalf of the Innocence Project as being not suitable or eligible for entry into CODIS. The legal struggle to overturn the Slover case convictions is being heard by Judge Rodney Forbes, who, during Thursday's hearing, gave Scott until November 26th to reply to the Innocence Project's latest motion filing. Scott would not comment about the case, but his options include seeking to have the defense claims dismissed, which would stop the legal proceedings at that point. If the request for dismissal fails, then the issue moves on to a full hearing with witnesses and would most likely extend into 2025. As for the defendants, Michael Slover Jr. Was paroled in March while his father died in prison from heart disease in June of 2022. Jeanette Slover remains incarcerated at the Decatur Correctional Center and is due to be paroled in November of 2028. They had all been convicted at trial in 2002, and all three got sentences of 60 years, with the father and son each receiving an additional 5 years for concealing a homicidal death. In more local and state news on page A3, Triple Killer's appeal rejected. Appellate court denies appeal in 1995 lethal Decatur crime spree. Springfield State Appeals Court judges have concluded that a Decatur defendant serving multiple life sentences for three bloody murders and an attempted murder got exactly what he deserved. The appellate court for the 5th District rejected the appeal filed by Contrell D. Williams, 48, who was just a teenager when he went on a lethal crime spree in Decatur over several months in the summer and fall of 1995. Williams had first filed for post-conviction relief in 2013 after being sentenced, claiming it amounted to cruel and unusual punishment for one so young. Williams got a new sentencing hearing in 2018 in Macon County Circuit Court and was resentenced to three life terms. He then appealed that decision and was again resentenced to the same punishment in 2022, and it was an appeal of this decision he took in the 5th District appellate judges, who now said they find no fault with the Circuit Judge Jeffrey Giesler's previous ruling, reaffirming the multiple life terms. In his latest appeal, Williams had again sought to argue that locking him up forever three times over for the offenses committed when he was just 17 amounted to cruel and unusual punishment forbidden by the 8th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. He also claimed the punishment violated the Illinois Constitution by being disproportionate and unfair. The appeals court decision, which runs to 17 pages, carefully recounts the details of Williams' nightmare rampage and began July 28, 1994, when the defendant and his accomplice and cousin, Tyrone L. Humphrey, then 17, robbed a store called Alley's Market. They had grabbed the cash drawer and demanded keys to a truck owned by the store owner, Mike Aliabadi. He handed over the keys to his building, but not the vehicle. Enraging Williams, the defendant shot Aliabadi in both arms after discovering that the key to the truck did not work, said Justice Judy Lynn Cates, who wrote the appeals court decision. Aliabadi survived his wounds. On August 10, 1994, Williams and Humphrey struck again. They had asked Decatur victims Shane Storm, 17, and his 16-year-old friend Carrie M. Whiteacre for a ride before robbing them of $50, hijacking their car and driving them to a patch of waste ground near Lake Decatur, where both boys were executed in cold blood. The defendant directed Humphrey to shoot Storm and Whiteacre at close range, Kate said. Storm and Whiteacre's bodies were found face down with their hands behind their heads. Whiteacre's cause of death was two gunshot wounds to the head, and Storm's death was due to three gunshot wounds to the head. The killer cousin's final victim, before they were tracked down and arrested, was to be Sherry Ellis. She was working as a cashier at the Huck's gas station in Larksdale Court on September 5, 1994, when Williams and Humphrey robbed it of $30 and a carton of cigarettes. The defendant shot Ellis, removed a VCR recording the shooting, and then shot Ellis two more times before leaving the gas station, said Cates. Ellis was found face down in a pool of blood and died at the hospital from the gunshot wounds. The bullets from the crime scene involving Aliabadi, Storm, and Whiteacre and Ellis were determined to be fired by the same gun, Cates wrote. The appellate justice noted in previous testimony, Williams had argued he was a changed man from the teenage killer who'd carried out the crimes. He said he had found God and deserved a lesser sentence because he was capable of rehabilitation. But Kate said the justices could not fault the reasoning of Giesler, who reached the legal standard of irretrievable depravity, permanent incorrigibility or irreparable corruption beyond the possibility of rehabilitation, and in making their decision on Williams' fate. The appellate judges also noted his history of criminality didn't stop once he was behind bars. The defendant had joined a prison gang in his 20s, the Latin Kings, and had stabbed a correctional officer to fulfill his gang initiation rites. Williams was later found guilty of armed violence and spent more than 7 years in solitary confinement at the Tam's Supermax prison, which has been closed. Williams is now incarcerated at the Menard Correctional Center. Illinois Farm Bureau fights expulsion. American FB sued over decision tied to Country Financial. Bloomington. Litigation challenging the American Farm Bureau's Federation's decision to terminate the Illinois Farm Bureau's membership in the organization was filed in McLean County Circuit Court on Wednesday. On November 7th, the AFBF's Board of Directors voted to eliminate IFB's membership, effective December 20th, after Country Financial, an IFB affiliate, eliminated a requirement that its non-farm-related policyholders have an active IFB membership. Country Financial's decision, which would go into effect January 1st, has the potential to reduce IFB's membership from about 400,000 to around 78,000. In a statement issued Wednesday, AFBF Executive Vice President Joby Young said the decision to end the Illinois organization's membership follows weeks of intensive efforts to meet with the leadership, which concluded with formal mediation that left the situation unresolved. At the heart of the matter for our board is the fact that farmers did not control an important membership decision that will harm farmers and Farm Bureau, Young wrote. This is contrary to Farm Bureau's core commitment to organizational control by farmers for the benefit of farmers. Illinois Farm Bureau President Brian Duncan said in a memo issued Wednesday that the Bureau believes AFBF is choosing to put Illinois farms, families, and communities at risk at a time when they need support through federal policy. AFBF touts its representation of American farmers and ranchers, yet it sources much of its stature and perceived power from people who are not farmers, but insurance customers, Duncan wrote. When membership for these individuals in Illinois becomes voluntary, AFBF's response is to abandon the very people it claims to represent, farmers. AFBF's decision would also prevent IFB from ever operating under the name Illinois Farm Bureau after December 20th. The suit argues prohibiting IFB from operating under the name it has used for the last century would be extremely detrimental to the organization's goodwill and reputation. Furthermore, expelling IFB from the national organization could violate an existing settlement agreement between the two parties. According to the lawsuit, AFBF and IFBF were in dispute after the nationwide organization sought to register the Farm Bureau designation with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. Non-agricultural policyholders with Country Financial are currently signed up to an associate membership with the IFB for $20 a year. This gives policyholders exclusive access to more than 300,000 discounts on a wide variety of services, according to Country Financial's website. According to the suit, the decision not to require IFB membership for non-agricultural policyholders was reached based on a number of factors, including the threat of non-renewal for clients who failed to pay the IFB membership dues, even as an oversight, the rising cost of insurance, and decades of feedback from non-farming clients expressing dissatisfaction with the requirement. Country Financial Farm Bureau will continue to have a strong partnership and very good relationship, and we fully expect that some of our non-farm clients will choose to be associate members of the IFB organization. Jennifer McDade, Manager of Public Relations and Corporate Social Responsibility for Country Financial, said. And that's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, November 15th, 2023. 2024. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.